In fact, since the incarnation signified the beginning of a new era, it had been symbolically assigned to March 25th, New Year's Day, and December 25th necessarily fell 9 months after. Dietrich nodded at the crash. In any case, a pretty display.
It is not a pretty display, the prior admonished him, but a dread and solemn warning to the mighty. Behold your god, a poor and helpless child.
Taken somewhat aback, Dietrich allowed the prior and the abbot to escort him toward the vestibule, proceeding slowly, for the abbot, an elderly man with a wisp of whitish hair wringing his bald headskin, walked with a hobble.
"Thank you for bringing us word of Brother Joachim," said the abbot. "We will inform the Strasbourg friary."
His eyes pinched in thought.
"A devout boy, I recollect. I hope you have taught him the dangers of excess. The spirituals could use a little restraint."
The abbot glanced sidelong at his prior.
"Tell him an accommodation may be reached. Marsilius is dead, I suppose you have heard. They're all dead now, save Occam, and he is making his peace with Clement. He is to go to Avignon and beg forgiveness."
Dietrich stopped short. "Occam? Do you know when?" He could not imagine Will begging pardon of anyone.
"In the spring. The chapter will meet and make a formal plea. Clement seeks a way to take him back without making it too obvious what a fool John was to expel him."
The abbot shook his head.
"Michael and the others went too far when they went to the Kaiser. It is not for us to order the affairs of kings, but to care for the poor and lowly."
"That," said Dietrich, "may require you to order the affairs of kings." The old man was silent for a moment longer before saying mildly,
"Have you learned the dangers of excess, Dietrich?"
Returning to the Dear Lady Church, Dietrich noticed that one of the fishwives setting up her booth had paused in her labors to watch him. He shivered against the breeze and pulled his hood up and pressed on. When he glanced back, she was tying the tent ropes. He had imagined her interest people had long forgotten. The Strasbourg diocese governed the Elsass, the Breisgau, and most of the Schwarzwald, but an archdeacon resident in Freiburg spoke in the bishop's name. Dietrich found the man praying at the Atonement Chapel, and thought it a good sign that a man so highly placed should be discovered on his knees. When the archdeacon crossed himself and rose, he saw Dietrich and exclaimed,
"Dietrich, my old, how goes it by you? I've not seen you since Paris."
He was a soft-spoken man, gentle in demeanor, and with pressing urgency to his eyes.
"I have now a parish in the Hochwald, not so grand as yours, Willy, but it is quiet."
Archdeacon Wilhelm crossed himself.
"God love us, yes. Too much excitement down here these past years. First Ludwig and Friedrich fighting over the crown, then the barons, Endingen, Usenberg, and Falkenstein, laying waste the Breisgau over God knows what for 6 years."
He gestured at the Atonement Chapel, which the barons had built in token of the peace.
"Then the Armleder, smashing and burning and hanging. So the madness ran from the Imperials to the Herrenfolk to the common ruck. God be praised for these 10 years of peace. God and the Swabian League. Freiburg and Basel enforce the peace on the barons now, and Zurich, Bern, Constance, and Strasbourg have joined, as you may have heard. Come, walk with me. Have you heard from Oriolai or Buridan or any of the others? Did they survive the pest?"
"I haven't heard. I'm told Occam is to make his peace."
Willy grunted and stroked his black and white beard.
"Until he picks his next quarrel. He must have dozed when his class discussed blessed are the peacemakers. Maybe the Franciscans don't teach that at Oxford."
In the nave, the overhead vault seemed to go on forever, and Dietrich saw what Gregor had meant about illuminating the interior. By the tower entrance stood a fine statue of the Virgin, flanked by two angels, carved in the old style of the previous century. The stained-glass lights were modern, save for the small round ones in the south transept, which were also in the old style.
"I have a troubling theological question, Your Grace."
"It must be troubling if I've become Your Grace,"
What is it?
Dietrich handed him the packet and explained in elliptical terms his thoughts regarding the Krenken, whom he described only as strangers of a terrible mien, governed in large measure by instinct rather than reason. Could folks so governed have souls?
If one is to err, Willy said, best to err on the side of caution. Assume they have souls, unless proven otherwise.
But their lack of reason...
You give reason too much weight. Reason and will are always impaired to some degree. Consider how a man will pull his hand from the fire without first weighing arguments, sic et non. Being subject to habits and conditions does not deprive a being of a soul.
What if the being owned the seeming of a beast, Dietrich ventured, and not that of a man?
A beast.
A swine, perhaps, or a horse, or a... or a grasshopper.
Willy laughed. Such a vain argument. Beasts possess the souls appropriate to them.
And if the beast could speak and build devices and...
Willy stopped walking and cocked his head.
Why so agitated, Dietl?
Over a secundum imaginationem.
Such questions make fine school puzzles in logic, but they have no practical significance. We were made in God's image, but God had no material body.
Dietrich sighed, and Willy placed a hand on his arm.
But for the sake of old Paris days, I will give the matter thought.
That is the problem with the schools, you know. They should teach the practical arts. Magic, alchemy, mechanics, all that dialectic is in the air.
The archdeacon waved a hand over his head, fluttering the fingertips.
Nah, folk like nothing better than a good disputation.
Remember the crowds at the weekly Quodlibets?
I'll tell you my first thoughts.
The archdeacon pursed his lips and lifted a forefinger.
The soul is the form of the body, but not as the shape of a statue is formatio et terminatio materiae. For form does not exist apart from material.
There is no whiteness without a white object.
But the soul is not a form in this simple sense, and in particular is not the shape of the material it informs. Therefore, the shape of the being does not affect the being's soul, for then something lower would move something higher, which is impossible.
The Council of Vienne declared otherwise, Dietrich suggested. The 9th article decreed the soul to be a form as any other form.
Or seem to. Poor Peter Orioli. He tried so hard to reconcile that decree to the teachings of the fathers, but that's what happens when you let a committee of amateurs muck around in these matters.
Now, Dietl, give me an embrace, and I will part to consider your problem.
The two wrapped arms for a few moments before granting each other the kiss of peace.
God be with you, Willy, Dietrich said when they parted.
You ought to visit Freiburg more often, the archdeacon said.
Outside the minster, Dietrich craned his neck, searching the gargoyles infesting the eaves, until he found the one that Gregor had mentioned, a demon clinging to the walls with spindly limbs, but with its ass stretched over the plaza. Runnels in the limbs channeled rainwater through the figure's ass onto the marketplace below. Folks called it the shitter. Dietrich's laughter attracted the attention of a frowsy dame selling smoked fish at a nearby booth in the Minsterplatz.
Good day, dear priest, the woman said in the accents of the Elsass. Nothing like the Lady Church where you come from, I wager.
No, nothing like it. But here there's nothing like where I come from either.
She gave him a peculiar look.
Contrary, are ye? I knew a man like that once, I did. I could show him a beautiful sunrise, and he would quote some Paris high and mighty who thought it might be the earth turning below the sun. Always had a second way to look at things.
She cocked her head and studied him.
I saw you before, and you favor him some. Here, put your hand here. One thing I'll never forget is the touch of his hand on my breast.
Dietrich recoiled, and the woman laughed.
But he weren't no cold fish, she said. No, he never recoiled from these sweet things, nor from this more tart one, eh?
She laughed again, but slowly fell quiet. When Dietrich turned away, her voice halted him before he had taken more than a few paces.
They looked for him, she said. Maybe more than I did, for they wanted to hang him, and I didn't want near that much